Let's again begin this message by turning to Genesis chapter 1, for we'll be spending most of our time again. Well, we'll start the message again here in Genesis 1. This will be the second part of a series in which we are challenging the validity of what has been the standard belief in identity circles concerning Genesis 1 and 2. The position that Genesis 1 and 2 teach two or more creations, with Adam and his race being created in Genesis 2 after the creation of the other races in Genesis 1. Now, I know this dual creation theory, or multiple creation theory, however you want to call it, that this dual creation theory has become so much a standard in identity circles that by suggesting something different, it's going to be considered by some, I'm sure, to be just near heresy or even blasphemy. And someone, I'm sure, is going to ask to be taken off the tape ministry as a result. It wouldn't surprise me if indeed that happens. But if that's the case, then so be it. You know, God has called me to preach the truth of His Word. And in so doing, I know there will certainly be those times where I'm going to have to walk all over someone's sacred cow. But that's just the way it is, you know, and I have to recognize that that's the way it is as well. But, you know, I don't expect that if what I'm going to reveal from the Scriptures in this series, for people who haven't heard it before, if indeed what I'm going to reveal from the Scriptures in this series is the truth of God's Word, I expect the majority of those who hear it to abandon the error in this area and embrace the truth. Because, you know, I found this about identity people. There are very few who have sacred cows. There are people who want the truth. And if this is the truth, then I believe when people hear it, they're going to embrace it. There will maybe be a few hotheads or soreheads over it. There will be some who I know won't agree with me, too, who will say, fine, if that's your position, that's fine, I just don't agree. And that's fine. But regretfully, there will be a few soreheads. But for the majority, I believe it's not going to be any problem at all, if indeed it's truth. And if it's not, then I'm certainly going to hear about it, won't I? Because that's another trait of identity folk, too. They aren't going to let you get away with anything. But if it's truth, I believe the majority will accept it. So, with that being said, let us proceed. As I brought out in our last message, if the other races of mankind are to be found in Genesis 1, then they must be found in either the word man, the phrase living creatures, or the phrase beast of the earth, as found stated in Genesis chapter 1. In last week's message, I eliminated option number 1. I explained how both the word Adam of Genesis 2 and man of Genesis 1 are both translated from the exact identical Hebrew word, number 120 in Strong's Concordance, the Hebrew word Adam. Consequently, as I mentioned in last week's message, whatever Adam is in Genesis 2, it's the same word. So whatever Adam is in Genesis 2, man has to be in Genesis 1. If Adam is a white man in Genesis 2 who blushes, then man in Genesis 1 has to be as well a white man that blushes. Why? Because in essence, they're both Adam. It was again just the choice of the translators to translate in one place, translate the word Adam, man, and in the other place, translated Adam. And consequently, as a result of that, the creation of the other races cannot be found in the word man as found in Genesis chapter 1. Now, let's move on in this message to option number 2, living creatures. You know, it's really becoming more widely known and accepted in our circles that the man of Genesis 1 cannot be the creation of the other races. That is becoming. Now, there's still some who are holding to that teaching, but there have been several that have changed their position in the last several years that understand that man simply cannot be the creation of the other races. But as a result, some have then taken the position that the living creatures, or the phrase in Hebrew, the kehi nefesh, of Genesis 1:24 is the creation of the other races. People who may have originally embraced or taught that man or what Genesis 1:26 was the other races, in understanding that man cannot be the creation of the other races, are now embracing, or teaching rather, that the living creatures are the races of the other man. Let's go to Genesis 1:24, where we find the living creatures thus used, and by some thus explained to be the other races. Genesis 1 and verse 24, it says, "Then God said, Let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle, creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind. And it was so." Now, that's the position that many are taking today. But let me ask, do the Scriptures bear this out as being truth? And again, we have to rely on the Scriptures. I don't want anybody to take my word on this, because what Ted Weiland believes or thinks is absolutely meaningless unless it's backed up by the Scriptures. And so we have to ask the questions, do the Scriptures bear this position as being true? In this message, I want to do an exhaustive study of all Old Testament passages which use the phrase living creatures, or kehi nephesh in the Hebrew, and see how it is biblically used or interpreted. In other words, we're going to let the Scriptures themselves determine how this should be interpreted in Genesis 1 and verse 24. Now note, if the phrase living creatures denotes the creation of the other races, then it must be in verse 24 just another listed category, just like cattle, creeping things, and beasts of the earth. Now, did you understand what I just said there? Let me repeat, because after last week's message, this is too confusing for me. So let me make sure that point is clear. If living creatures in Genesis 1:24 is the creation of the other races, then it has to be just another category along with beasts of the field, crawling creatures, and cattle. Look at Genesis 1:24 again. "Then God said, Let the earth bring forth living creatures." The position would have to be that's one category, and then along with cattle, creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind, and it was so. That has to be the position if living creatures specifically is in reference to the other races. But let me ask, is this the case? Is that the case as we find it used here in Genesis 1 and verse 24 and throughout the rest of the Old Testament passages that use that phrase? Well, upon examination of this term, in both this passage and in all other passages which it is used, we find the term is used exclusively as a heading under which other categories fall, rather than a category in and of itself. In every passage, the phrase is used, including this one, as we will see. In order for it to be the creation of the other races here in Genesis 1:24, it has to just be a category. It cannot be a heading if it's being interpreted to mean that specifically. Now let's begin. Let's go through these different passages, beginning, of course, with the one under consideration, Genesis 1 and verse 24. And this time let's add verse 25 along with it. Verse 24, and listen carefully to what's said there, and read along with me, especially if you're reading New American Standard, so it won't be confusing here. But read or listen to what how the New American Standard phrases all of these two verses. Verse 24, "Then God said, Let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after their kind, and it was so." Verse 25, "And God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after its kind, and God saw that it was good." Now I hope as you were listening, or especially if you were reading New American Standard along with me, I hope you caught at least two different things that I think are very relative in those two verses. Now first of all, note that verse 25 is simply a reiteration. It's almost word for word in some ways. It's a reiteration of verse 24. It just simply repeats what's already been said in verse 24. Now, if the term living creatures in verse 24 is just another category of created beings, along with cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth, then let me ask you this question. If that's the case, then why weren't the living creatures listed again with the other three categories as they were reiterated in verse 25. Living creatures is conspicuously absent in verse 25. And verse 25 is simply a reiteration of the previous verse. If there's four categories in verse 24, why is there only three categories in verse 25? Being as it's a reiteration. Are you with me? Why? Because, simply because, the phrase living creatures in verse 24 was only a heading and not another category. If it was another category, it would have had to have been listed again in verse 25 with the other three categories. Now also note, if you've got New American Standard Version, also note the colon following the phrase living creatures in verse 24. Then God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, colon, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth after their kind, and it was so. Note the colon there by the New American Standard translators, indicating that they also believe this to be a heading under which the other three categories fall. Now this in and of itself doesn't prove anything, but it is interesting to note that they saw it as a heading rather than a category. They could have been wrong, so that's why we need to do an exhaustive study of all the passages that use this phrase to see how the Bible uses it. But it is interesting to note that. The same indication of this being a category, or excuse me, a heading rather than a category, is also found in the Revised Standard Version, the Amplified Bible, the New International Version, the New Oxford Annotated Bible, the Jerusalem Bible, the New Jerusalem Bible, the New English Bible, and Farrah Fenton's Bible, and others as well. A list of them make it very clear. Some you can't tell either way. It could be either way. But in those versions, it is very clear by the way that this verse was translated by these translators in these versions or translations, it is very clear that they saw that, again, as just a heading. Two examples. One I didn't list in the previous list. The Septuagint Bible, in the translation of Charles Thompson, puts it this way. Very similar to Farrah Fenton's, which I'll give you too. Listen how it puts it. It couldn't be any clearer. It says, then God said, let the earth produce, New American Standard, or in King James uses living creatures, Septuagint Bible in this translation uses animal life. That's how they saw it. Then God said, let the earth produce animal life according to its kind, four-footed beasts and reptiles and wild beasts of the earth according to their kind. No question, they saw it as a heading which these other categories fell under. Farrah Fenton's very similar, uses the same term. It says, God then said, let the earth produce animal life according to its species, in quadrupeds, reptiles, and all wild animals answering to their species. Now, I don't expect to have this to have any effect on the King Jamers. You know, those people who claim the only translation that is authorized by God and inspired by God is the King James Version. So they didn't use King James, because King James kind of leaves it up in the air. You could take it either way. But I hope the King Jamers will at least do this much for me, is that they'll at least take the rest of what the King James Bible shows and all of the other examples where this term is used and see that that indeed this is meant to be a heading rather than a category in this particular verse. Now also, before we leave here, let's look at verse 28 of Genesis 1 as well. Genesis 1:28 reads, and God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Now the phrase that's under consideration is the phrase living creatures. Here it uses the phrase living beast. Note that half of the phrase living creatures is found in verse 28. It's the word living from the Hebrew word, or translated again from the Hebrew word tehi, in this phrase living thing. And notice that the phrase living thing here is used very similar as living creatures was in verse 24. It is also used as a heading, which in this case automatically includes all land animals. It didn't list every different kind of, or every species of land animals. It just included all land animals, these living tehi things, in contrast to the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky. So that's, I think, at least should be looked upon. Now, with all this considered, relative to verse Genesis 1 and verse 24, especially in light of how the different translations put their emphasis on it, with all this considered, and especially in light of verse 25, clearly living creatures, as found in verse 24, is simply a heading which cattle, creeping things, and beasts of the earth fall under. But let's not stop there. We just stop there and say that settles it. And I believe it does. I believe the context of that particular verse in and of itself settles it. That was intended only as a heading which other categories fell under. But it is further established that living creatures is used as a heading and not a specific category by examining the rest of the passages using this same phrase in the Old Testament. Let's now go back. I want to start with Genesis 1:24 because that was the passage under consideration. But now let's go back to Genesis 1 and verses 20 and 21, where we find actually find the phrase used the very first time. And again, we're going to see that had they just not limited themselves only to that particular passage and then misinterpreted that passage on top of it, if they'd have looked at the rest of the passages that use this term, very clearly, it cannot mean the other races of mankind. Look at this one, Genesis chapter 1, starting with verse 20. New American Standard doesn't translate a phrase in verse 20 as well as it should have. It translates another phrase, living creatures, and then the same phrase, kehi nefesh, in the Hebrew, is used in Genesis verse 21. So we're not considering necessarily the phrase the first time it's used in verse 20, but the second time is found in verse 21. Okay, I don't want to get too technical, but sometimes you got to get technical to explain things here. Genesis 1, starting with verse 20. Then God said, "Let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures," different phrase, "and let birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of the heavens." Verse 21, "And God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves with which the waters swarmed after their kind, and every winged bird after its kind, and God saw that it was good." Now first note that living creatures in verse 20 is clearly used as a type or category, is not used as a type or category, but instead again used as a heading here. But a heading for what? It's indeed a heading. But a heading for what? Now keep in mind that we are dealing with those who believe that living creatures in verse 24 are the other races of man. But what is the living creatures described as in verse 21? Well, clearly, the heading is describing life which lives in the waters, most specifically fish. That's what, very clearly, I mean, there's no question what living creatures are here. Now, it would be difficult. It would have been beyond the point of the passage to have divided all the fish into, or all quote unquote fish, or let's say all water life into all its different subdivisions. At this point, it would have not been necessary for the sake of the passage. So in this case, living creatures is used again to include all fish and related species. You can see that's how it's being used. Now, unless that's how it's being used, and I don't think anyone's going to argue that point in these particular two verses. Now, unless the other races of mankind have scales, fins, and gills, living creatures cannot be used specifically to describe them. Anybody know any race that's got gills, fins, scales? Excuse me? Well, we'll come to mermaids down the road here. We're not gonna throw mermaids out yet. Just cannot be. Living creatures here very clearly is a designation or a heading is really all it is, speaking about water life. Okay, let's go to our next passage, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7. And we're just taking these not necessarily in order of importance, but in order of sequences found in the scriptures, except for Genesis 1:24, which we began with. Genesis 2 and verse 7, listen to what it says. Then Yahweh God formed man of the dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And by the way, that's usually pointed out by the dual creationists as being something very specific and unique to Adam. We'll deal with that here in just a minute. Again, verse 7. Then the Yahweh God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. Now, to begin with, let it be noted that, first of all, the word being here is simply the translator's choice. They simply used a different word for the word nephesh, or creature. They could have translated him a living creature. King James, somebody has that, I'm sure, I believe, translates the same phrase as living soul. And they did so simply, rather than calling Adam or man a creature, they decided to call him a soul or a being. But it's the same, understand. It's the same Hebrew phrase that's being used here. That's what's important. It's the Hebrew phrase, kei nephesh, same phrase as found in Genesis 1 and verse 24. So, in other words, we find the same phrase, kei nephesh, here in Genesis 2:7. Now, who was it used here in reference to? Anybody figure that out? Adam. Very clearly it was used in reference to Adam. But wait a minute. I thought that kehi nephesh was the creation of the other races of mankind, in contrast to the creation of Adam. Well, obviously not. Because very clearly here it is the phrase used in description of Adam himself. Adam and all his progenitors to come in the future, all his genealogy. Now, very clearly, this is a phrase that's used in a very general sense and used as a heading. In this case, it might be well to also note that only after God breathed the breath of life into Adam was he recognized as a living being, soul, or creature. He wasn't that until God breathed the breath of life into him. In other words, as Adam lay on the ground after God had fashioned him from the dust of the earth, before he brought him to life, he was considered a man. There lay a man. He wasn't yet living, but there was the form of a man, a human being. He was considered that. He was considered a man at that point, but not until after he was brought to life was he considered a living creature. My, is that profound. Is that ever deep? He wasn't considered a living creature until he was brought to life. You know, let's not try to make more out of this than what's there. That is all that the term means. Something living. Living creature. Whether it is Adam, whether it's fish, birds, cattle, creeping things, or beasts of the earth. That's what living creature means. Something that has been brought to life and is living. Thus, consequently, Adam himself became a living creature after he had the breath of life breathed into his nostrils. Now, what about this breath of life? You know, again, multiple creation theorists want to say that the breath of life here for Adam is something that was uniquely given to him that was not given to man or the creation of the other races in Genesis 1, whoever they might be there. Well, is that the case? Is the breath of life something that's unique to Adam himself? Was it something peculiar or unique to him? Well, turn with me to Genesis chapter 7. And we'll find out that it was not at all. Genesis chapter 7. We might ask, too, was this breath of life something that was very, very special, something very spiritual that was given to Adam that the rest of animal life didn't have? Genesis 7, verses 21 through 23. Notice first what it's dealing with, and then notice what happens. 21, and all flesh that moved on the earth perished. Birds and cattle and beasts and every swarming thing that swarms upon the earth, and all mankind, that's number 120, Adam again, of all that was on the dry land, all in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life, died. This is, of course, talking about the flood. In other words, everything living, whether you believe in a local or a worldwide flood, everything in whatever geographical area was covered by the flood, everything living died in the flood, just like it would in any flood. What were they described as? Those creatures, birds, animals, beasts of the field, no matter what it was, man, that had the, not just the breath of life breathed into them, the breath of the Spirit of life breathed into them. If you want to make something special, it'd have to be in this passage when it adds the breath of the Spirit of life. Of course, it's talking about the same thing. It's just talking about bringing something to life or something that was living. Verse 23, continuing, goes on and shows exactly again what was being dealt with here or which had the breath of life in them. Verse 23, thus he blotted out every living thing that was upon the face of the land, from man to animals, to creeping things and to birds of the sky, and they were blotted out from the earth, and only Noah was left together with those that were with him in the ark. You know, according to multiple creationists, that only Noah should have been the one who had the breath of life. Not birds, not animals, not beasts of the field, not any of these things. Because they say it was something special only given to Adam and his race. And yet here we find that it was something that was given to everything that was living. Because it was simply the means for them to live. The breath of life that God gave to all creation. Now, Genesis, I believe that, again, this passage in itself, and I think every passage we've seen thus far does it, but especially this one. I believe Genesis 2:7's usage of living creatures should be enough to clinch it for anyone. That living creatures is not a term being used to describe the other races of mankind because it's specifically used in talking about Adam himself. It is a description used in that way. Now, but that should clinch it. I believe that one really clinches it. But let's continue to look at some of the other passages that use this term as well. Let's go now to Genesis chapter 2, verses 19 and 20. Verse 19, it says, and out of the ground Yahweh God formed every beast of the field and every bird of the sky and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called a living creature, that was its name. And the man gave names to all the cattle and to the birds of the sky and to every beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found a helper suitable for him. Again, very clearly, we find living creature. Very clearly, it is simply a classification rather than a specific category. And in this case, it includes every beast of the field, every bird of the sky, and all cattle. In almost identical fashion as we find it used in Genesis 1 and verse 24. Again, simply a heading wherein these different categories fall under. Okay, next passage, Genesis chapter 9. Genesis chapter 9, and we'll read a little bit longer passage, verses 9 through 17. Genesis 9, starting with verse 9. Now behold, I myself do establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, of all that comes out of the ark, even every beast of the earth. And I establish my covenant with you, and all flesh shall never again be cut off by the water of the flood, neither shall there again be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant which I am making between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all successive generations. I set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a sign of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come about when I bring a cloud over the earth that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. That the bow shall be seen in the cloud. 15. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and never again shall the water become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the cloud, then I will look upon it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant which I established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. Okay, now we see here in this in Genesis 9, verses 9 through 17, a living creature is used 3, 4, or 5 different times. I want to center in, though, on verse 10, where it's used, I think, the first time for this passage. It's verse 10. Let's start with verse 9. Now behold, I myself do establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you and with every living creature. Okay, he, Nephesh, once again. And with every living creature that is with you, and the with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, and all that comes out of the ark, even every beast of the earth. Okay, now catch here, that just the way it's phrased again in the New American Standard, that again it implies that the living creatures, rather than being a separate or another category, was instead just a heading. Let me read it again. And every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you. Again, it gives the heading, and then it gives the categories that fall under the heading. Now what I want to do to further verify this is let me share with you several I want to look at verse 10 in several other translations. And I want you to observe how they also put emphasis on living creatures as being just a category. I'm going to give you several here. I hope this isn't too redundant. But I want you to catch and then just the emphasis that's put again, once again, upon this being a heading and not a category. Let's go to King James. For the sake of the King Jamers, let's go to the King James Version to begin with. It says, and with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, and of every beast of the earth that is with you. Again, it uses the comma there, but nonetheless, it still clarifies that it's being used as a heading. And with every living creature that is with you, comma, of the fowl, of the cattle, and of every beast. I think it does a better job than the New American Standard does in this particular case. Let's go to the Revised Standard Version. It reads, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and the every beast of the earth that is with you, as many as come out of the ark. Very similar to New American Standard, actually. Also, we find the same in the Complete Bible in American Translation, the Old Testament, by J.M. Powis Smith. It's very similar to the same thing we found in the Revised Standard Version. The NIV puts it almost the exact same way, but gives it further emphasis as being a heading because it uses a dash instead of a comma. It would read, in other words, and with every living creature that is with you, dash, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth. So it gives further emphasis or greater emphasis to it being a heading. Also, the NIV uses a dash. Another translation that uses a dash is the New Translation of the Holy Scriptures according to the Masoretic text. Here's how it translates it. And with every living thing that is with you, dash, birds, cattle, and every wild beast as well, all that has come out of the ark. Again, clearly signifying or indicating that it is a heading and not a category. Here's the Amplified Bible's translation of verse 10. And with every living creature that is with you, whether the birds, the livestock, or wild beasts of the earth along with you. Again, very clearly a heading. New Berkeley Version almost is word for word, same as the Amplified. Then I thought for the sake of those who use the Sacred Name Bible, which I don't use, by the way. I simply have changed my New American Standard, so I'm a little bit more accurate than the Sacred Name Bible, who's taken Lord and God completely out of the Bible. But for their sake, let me use their version. Restoration of the original Sacred Name Bible. Verse 10, and with every living soul that is with you, of birds, of tame beasts, and of wild beasts of the earth that are with you, of all coming forth out of the ark. Again, a hiss being used as a heading. Here's Young's literal translation of the Bible. A lot of our people like to use it. Here's how it translates verse 10. And with every living creature which is with you, among fowl, among cattle, and among every beast of the earth with you. Again, using different words in there, whether it be whether or among or however, it's all indicating that living creatures in this passage was a heading. Here's the Septuagint Bible in the translation of Charles Thompson. And with every living creature with you, both birds and cattle, and with all the wild beasts of the earth which are with you. William Tyndale's Five Book of Moses, called the Pentateuch, which he put together in 1884, translated in 1884, basically gives the same thing, but uses a colon, very similar to the Septuagint translation of Thompson, but uses a colon, which indeed, again, sets off living creatures as being just a heading. The New Jerusalem Bible also uses a colon. New Jerusalem Bible, by the way, is usually a Catholic version. But there are people in our movement who feel it's a very good translation and use it. I know one particular man in particular that does so. The New Jerusalem Bible uses a colon. It says, and with every living creature that is with you, colon, birds, cattle, and every wild animal with you. And then today's English version, which I think is a very loose translation, but nonetheless, it simply puts it And if it's right, it settles it for all time. It says, and with all living beings, dash all birds and all animals, dash everything that came out of the boat with you. So it makes it very clear, again, that it's a heading. But I think the most interesting is Farrah Fenton's. I regretfully don't have a Farrah Fenton's, at least at this time. And so I called Hurst knowing that he had one, and I had him read and over the phone Farrah Fenton's translation. And Farrah Fenton's, again, I believe, nails it down. Here's how Farrah Fenton translates it. He takes the word living creatures, understanding, obviously, that it means anything living. In this particular case, dealing with all animal life, he translates it as such. Here's how he translates it. And with every living animal, not different races, because he understood how it was being used in this passage and what the term meant. He said, and with every living animal that is with you, with bird and cattle and every animal of the earth with you. And again, there is absolutely nothing wrong, especially in light of how this phrase is used throughout the Old Testament, for Farrah Fenton to have translated, in this case, every living animal. Because that is indeed what it is referring to, used as a heading rather than a category. Without a doubt, especially in light of all the evidence from these translations, once again, in this passage again, living creatures is used as a heading to signify all animal and bird life on the earth. Okay, next passage under consideration will be Leviticus chapter 11. Now, this is not one of the most exciting sermons you've ever heard. We're just kind of digging through and getting through these passages. But I think it's important for us, again, to establish and look at every time this phrase is used and see if there's ever anywhere that would indicate that this phrase can be used to imply the other races of mankind, used as a specific phrase in that fashion. And so we're looking at every time that it's used. Leviticus 11 will be the next one, starting with verse 10, and then we're going to jump down to verses 46 and 47. Leviticus 11, verse 10, it says, but whatever is in the seas and in the rivers that do not have fins and scales among all the teeming life of the water and among all the living creatures that are in the water, they are detestable things to you. Of course, this is the passage of clean and unclean foods, what we can and cannot eat. In this case, it's talking about specifically about the water life that neither has fins or scales, okay? But in the same light, it's also implying that there are other water life that's called living creatures that do have fins and scales as well. Then jump down also to verses 46 and 47. It says, this is the law regarding the animal and bird and every living thing that moves in the waters and everything that swarms on the earth, to make a distinction between the unclean and the unclean, between the unclean and the clean, and between the edible creature and the creature which is not eaten. The word creature there in that last verse is half of the word again, or half of the phrase, kehi nephesh. It's again translated from the word nephesh. With that in light, in verse 10, once again, living creatures is a classification denoting that which inhabits seas and rivers, whether they have fins or don't have fins. Hardly the characteristics of humans or humanoids, unless, of course, Hirsch, you believe in mermaids. It just doesn't cut the mustard at all to make living creatures the other races of mankind. Now let's go to Ezekiel chapter 1. Ezekiel chapter 1, I want to read verses 5 through 10. This passage we're going to see somewhat of a different use of this term, but nonetheless I think we'll still see it verified that it is used as a heading. Ezekiel 1, starting with verse 5. And within it there were figures resembling four living beings, and this was their appearance. They had human form. Again, living beings there, same Hebrew phrase, nephesh kehi, or kehi nephesh, Each of them had four faces and four wings, and their legs were straight, and their feet were like a calf's hoof, and they gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings, on their four sides, were human hands. As for the faces and wings of the four of them, their wings touched one another. Their faces did not turn when they moved. Each went straight forward. As for the form of their faces, each had the face of a man. And all four had the face of a lion on the right and the face of a bull on the left. And all had the, and all four had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. Their wings were spread out above. Each had two touching another being and two covering their bodies. I went one verse further than I needed to. Here is living creatures, kehi nephesh, again being used to describe some type of living being in symbolic language. I'm sure no one would argue. And I'm sure, again, we can see that it's being used in that fashion, and I'm sure no one is going to argue that this description fits the other races of mankind. I mean, we may have racists in our midst, but I don't think we've got anybody that's that much of a racist that's going to say this is a description of the other races of mankind. It just will not work. Okay. Now, and I need to probably state here, it is used several more times here in Ezekiel in the very same fashion that we don't need to go over. It uses it several times in relation to these figures throughout Ezekiel 10 and verse 20. So we've basically dealt with it by dealing with it in this passage. So I can continue to use the word exhaustive here. We've exhaustively covered it because through Ezekiel 10 and verse 20, it simply uses the phrase in the same manner. Now, for the last passage, let's turn to Ezekiel 47 and verse 9. Ezekiel 47, verse 9 reads, "And it will come about that every living creature which swarms in every place where the river goes will live. And there will be very many fish, for these waters go there, and the others become fresh, so everything will live where the river goes." Here again, we find living creature used in the same fashion as we did in Genesis 1 and Leviticus 11. That is, as an identification for all fish and related species. Again, water creatures. And as a result of having now examined all of the passages that use the phrase living creature, I believe it can be stated emphatically that that absolutely no evidence can be found to substantiate the claim that in this phrase is found the creation of the other races. We've looked at every passage throughout the Old Testament that uses that phrase. And I'd like somebody, if there's any evidence in any of those passages, raise your hand, debate it with me. Is there any evidence in any of those passages that the term or phrase living creatures can imply the other races of mankind? It simply cannot be done, whether it be in Genesis 1:24 or in any of the other passages that we've now examined. Instead, we are given unquestionable testimony to the fact that living creatures is just a heading under which other categories fall rather than a category in and of itself. We have witnessed that it is simply a heading which is used in referring to Adam, to all land animals, to birds, insects, fish, and other related species. That is simply a phrase talking about living life, whatever it may be. Even when it's used in symbolic terms. But, having done all that, I'm sure someone is thinking to themselves right now, or someone who will be listening to the tape at this point, will be thinking to themselves, okay, living creatures cannot specifically be used in reference to the other races of mankind. But who's to say that the other races are not one of the categories which would fall under the heading? I admit, can't be one of the categories, but who's to say one of the categories under that heading is not the other races? Well, first, let's recognize again that in all the passages using living creatures, not once do we find any indication of this ever being the case. That under this heading, in all of those different passages, was there any indication, nobody at least in this audience, and I don't expect it in any other, from anybody else who's going to hear this tape, to come up with the fact that there was any indication. Now they may say, it's the beasts of the earth over here, or it's the cattle, or it's the crawling creatures, or whatever else they want to come up with. But that's just a statement of their own. What I'm talking about is indication in the passage which says, hey, these are other races. And I don't expect it to ever happen, because it just is not there within the passages themselves. Now, don't misunderstand me. I do believe that the other races are living creatures. And I don't get confused by this either. But I do believe they're living creatures, because anything living is a living creature, right? Okay, but the question is, are the other races a part of that which is being identified in Genesis 1:24? That's the question. Yes, according to what we've seen in the scriptures, they have to be living creatures. But are they living creatures identified in Genesis 1:24? If Genesis 1:24 is using the term living creatures as a heading which includes the other races, then they must be found in one of the categories listed in Genesis 1:24. That make sense? Yeah, you're confused, I can tell. I get no nods, no consensus. I hope you're with me. They have to be. If they're the race, if they're one of the categories, or if they're included under that heading, they have to be one of the categories listed. What was listed? In other words, they would have to be found in as being either cattle, creeping things, or beast of the earth. Living creatures in and by itself absolutely cannot be the other races. And if the other races are found in Genesis 1:24, those are our three choices. Cattle, creeping things, or beasts of the field. So which is it, if any? Well, you'll have to stay tuned for the next message in order to get the answer. One thing is absolutely certain thus far in this series, and that is that the other races of mankind can neither be found in man or in the living creatures of Genesis chapter 1. That I can state emphatically. Stay tuned and let's find out which, if any, of the other stated categories of Genesis 1:24 are the other races of mankind. Let's stand and we'll close in prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we come before you again thankful that you're our God and our King, our Judge and Lawgiver, that we stand before you and not before any other unrighteous judge or vicar or whatever. Lord, that we stand knowing that you'll be true to your word and that whatever is found in it, that we'll be held accountable to it. I pray that as these messages go out, that our people would be accountable to the truth found therein. Lord, that if there's things that are wrong and need to be changed, that they would be alert to that and not accept what is untrue. But that which is biblical, Lord, let our people accept and let us teach your word in the right manner, in the correct way, that it would bring praise and glory to you and that it could be used in the effective manner that you have planned for it. We do thank you for it. We thank you for your Son and sacrifice made on our behalf through him, for the salvation given us. We now praise you and ask your blessings upon all of this and through Yahshua the Christ. Amen.